Thank you for joining us for Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something and where we cover your pop culture landscape through our geek lens. We're broadcasting from the Twin Cities Film Fest Studios. I'm Ms. Shannon. My podcast husband is right across the studio from me. Hello, Jayton.
Hey!
Jayton Satia, the executive director of the Twin Cities Film Fest. Jayton, I'm very excited today because not only are we going to talk to this week's guest geek, our friend Stephanie Allensworth. She has lots of projects that are going on right now. And one of the things I want to talk to Stephanie about today is she's an author. And we have some other friends that are authors. And
yes.
I'm always fascinated when our author friends are at like book fairs and things like that.
I have always wanted to write a book, so maybe you can mentor me.
Yes.
I have a couple of ideas that I want to explore, but mm-hmm. I'm not a writer. I barely read. So I don't know why I want to be an author. I just want to tell a story. And people are like, you should just make a movie. I'm like, I know, but I think I need to write it down first before I can go to that step.
So, Jayton, have you done any, like, screenwriting then? Have you done any form of
long form? I read
enough.
No, okay. I read enough, and I know what I'm good at, which is identifying the good characters and kind of building on those. I'm not good at actually putting them on in that official format.
We need to hire you a ghostwriter.
I would love to have a ghostwriter. Yes.
So we will actually talk to Stephanie. Stephanie has a couple of children books that are out, and she actually has another project that will be coming out very, very, very soon. And so I'm going to actually bring Stephanie to the microphone in case she has anything to weigh in on our first thing. So hello, 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 Ms. Allensworth.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us here on Be Our Geek.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And we appreciate, because she is honestly, like, right. She boots on the ground the minute she was done with that book fair. She came here to visit us. So I know it's a busy weekend.
She brought treats.
Yes. So thank you very much. So part of the reason why I wanted to introduce you in case you wanted to weigh in is that we wanted to talk about a film that...
A little known film.
A little known independent film. A little indie film called Avengers Endgame. Now, a number of our friends, Jayton, were incredibly jealous because you and I had a chance to go to a preview screening.
I'm still getting hate mail. And I'm like, you guys can see it this weekend, just like everybody else across the globe.
We were very fortunate to be able to see it, Stephanie, at a preview screening earlier this week, and then we both already had tickets for Thursday.
For opening night, yeah.
Correct. And so we now both have seen Avengers Endgame twice.
I might actually go see it tonight again.
Ah, fair enough. And if I didn't have a gig, I probably would. So we are going to do a spoiler-free show.
Yeah.
But we do think that we would be remiss if we didn't at least give a basic review as far as our feelings and the tone and tenor of the film. Is that right? Make sense, Jayton?
It does.
Yeah. Because, well, just to give you guys a little bit of the backstory and what's going on with Avengers Endgame right now, it has already broken the global box office record. Avengers Endgame has now made an estimated $644 million worldwide in the box office.
And that it's Saturday.
That's Saturday.
Yeah. Two days.
We're not even close to over with the weekend, and so that makes it the biggest global opening in film history. So it now knocked off its predecessor, Infinity Wars, and the other opening weekend internationally that was even close was 2017's The Fate and the Furious.
Sure.
And so we obviously, I mean, I just wanted to reminisce a little bit about what we felt like. Imagine Jayton and Shannon sitting around back in 2008 and going,
Iron Man, that looks pretty good. Yeah, some people will go watch it. Robert Downey Jr., he's got some pull.
That's the comeback.
The comeback
kid now. We learned that that was honestly his redemption tale, is him coming back in that one.
Obviously, we're not geniuses. We're consumers at that point in 2008. And again, they predicted, Marvel was like, this is what we're going to give you in the next decade. And we're all like, what?
I mean, even
just
fans, even as fans, I think that we were still poking holes in this theory that there was going to be a Marvel Cinematic Universe and that they were really going to be able to fill all of these films, have all of these ancillary products that we have as Netflix
and somehow
series,
tied into
television
each other.
Series, one-off web series, all of these things, and have this whole world make sense and culminate with a film. 22 films later, we have Avengers: Infinity War. So, Jayton, were they successful in your opinion?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you were to say no, you are living under a rock.
Yes.
But again, it's from a business side. There's some geniuses that work in that world, they had thought about, the president of Marvel had thought about this since day one, right, since he had launched Iron Man. He knew exactly how every character was going to tie into each other. They knew exactly, obviously, with Disney's power, merchandising. They knew exactly what time, what film, when it would get released. There were a couple of pushes on, like, hey, we're going to release this a little bit later than anticipated, because also Disney also has Star Wars, so they were kind of messing around with that. But no, I think this is exactly what they were hoping and predicting, but I actually think they are blown away by how amazing the fan base has been around it.
Right.
Because again, with a hardcore fan base, you're always leery of one bad anything and everything goes downhill.
I also want to give Marvel a lot of credit, because even as a fan and a reader of their comic books, there were still, if you're looking at the anthology, the 22 films that we have from Marvel, there were still some times where I'm like, okay, you're going to take that franchise? That's going to make sense in this storyline? And so, you know, even when I saw them promoting that we were going to have the Guardians of the Galaxy and promoting that we were going to have Ant-Man and have it be this heist film and these different little spin-offs that they were going to have, the reason why they're going to be important in the franchise, I was like, I don't know if I see it, but I'll give it a shot. And now we're here, and I'm like, they have managed to create so many in this universe to be able to have different worlds that then eventually manage to meld together and it all makes sense. And I am blown away with how well the last two Avengers films have managed to do that.
And to think about it, out of those 22, different genres within that as well. You have, obviously, the heist films. You have action, of course. You have dramas. You have character dramas. You have comedies mm-hmm. thrown in there as well, which is like, how are you going to make a superhero comedic? Like, how is that even going to play? But with that in mind, they knew exactly when to release a specific film. And again, I'm going to go back to something that they, you know, at the base of everything is picking the right actor to play the right superhero.
Right.
I don't think they could have done anything better than exactly the characters that they select, the actors that they selected to play those characters.
Right.
As I look at even like the ancillary or the other, again, spoiler free, but you do get a little end credit, you know, homage and nod to a lot of these characters who may or may not be in the film,
right?
Right. But the fact that they're saying thank you to all of these characters, and you look back, you're like, oh my God, yes, he was this, and
right,
she was this, and it makes you reminisce, and I think they tie it in very well.
Well, I am very excited. We know that we have four more television series that are coming out very, very soon. We know that we have a number of films that are already on the docket. And now, after
Well, Spider-Man's coming out.
Right, so that
and
one's
that's
coming
gonna
out.
That's going to be supposedly the end of Phase 3 of the cinematic releases.
And then we move on to our Phase 4, which I now have great hope for the future.
I do, too, but at the same capacity, again, I'm sure they have it all figured out. I'm confused as a fan to be like, exactly how are you going to progress some of these storylines, knowing that the cinematic universe has kind of ended this little particular
thing. See, and I feel like I have more clarity after seeing Endgame. You know, I feel as though any of the characters that needed to be sunset, and again, we don't want to do it, I felt like it was sunset in an appropriate way that gave a number of things that I wanted to have closure for as a fan. I feel as though I had closure after this phase. And so it didn't leave me with a lot of questions. It left me with, okay, I get it. You know, I felt satisfied. And I think that was one of the reviews that you put online, is you felt satisfied after seeing this film.
I did. And satisfied in very different formats. Satisfied that they ended the series the right way. Satisfied in the fact that, without any spoilers, the people, the superheroes that survived, the ones that didn't for a reason.
Right.
It wasn't just emotional. They weren't
just whacking people because we're like, we want you guys to cry. It wasn't like Game of Thrones where they just like, you like somebody? Dead.
It wasn't an emotional pull. And I do agree with you in saying, like, I do have more clarity on, after watching the Endgame, on some of the characters and where they're going to take the mantle and then move it forward. Now, that being said, in the universe, cinematic universe, there's always bad guys.
True.
Right?
There
always will be bad. Thanos is not the only...
The only villain.
The only villain,
right,
of course. So, knowing that, I do think the cohesiveness of the all fighting for one.
Yes.
Survival goes a long way in creating that character story moving forward. It's like, how are they able to move forwards with Captain Marvel, with Black Panther, with some of these other Hawkeye?
Yes.
Right? I mean, knowing that the original Avengers are quote-unquote broken up now. Right. How are the other going to offshoot? So I'm curious as to what is going to happen, but I'm also confused as to exactly what they're going to do with this.
Well, I have some particular theories that I would be a fan of, but I am happy to move forward with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so I think
I'm bought in. I wish I would have had some stock in it.
Did you wish that you would have gotten this one in your fantasy film league? You know you
wanted
it.
Yeah.
Who got it?
Yeah. The guy who won the damn fantasy league. We actually did one for the summer, and I ended up with Aladdin.
Okay.
I almost had Lion King, but I had to give that up because it was going way too high of a price point for me. I got Spider-Man.
Okay.
So I feel very comfortable for the summer. Somebody got Avengers because, again, it's... You still have the trail off of not the first weekend, but after that.
Right.
So it's still going to make whatever it's going to make. So
yeah. This is one of those ones because it came in at 3 hours and some change. I could see you having to see it a bunch of times.
So
we both saw it twice. And
we
were
both
fine with it.
Saw it twice, and I did not go to the bathroom either of those two.
You're amazing.
Times.
What are you, a camel? What are you doing? How did you do that?
I prepared.
I didn't. I was like, I'm just going to have to be very efficient when I go. So
I had to bite my tongue on a couple of scenes because I was watching it with three of my friends who knew that I'd watched the film already, and they were the ones sending me hate mail because I didn't invite them to it. But I had to bite my tongue on a couple things, but I caught myself small little giggles.
Yes.
Right before something was going to happen.
Yeah, that's what my friend and I took with me as well.
You know, I would, again, without spoilers, I would go like, and then 30 seconds later, something funny would happen. Because
yes.
I'm already playing that ahead in my head.
Right.
And then I literally got a poke in my little shoulders like, stop. I don't want anything.
Because I wasn't laughing at it, but my friend did, because I intentionally, because I had some friends ask me for spoilers. And I said, I'm not doing that. Like, even once, the only person I did tell, like, I gave the whole rundown to my mom, because I know my mom doesn't care. So she made me basically just tell her the whole movie. And I'm like, or just go see the movie. She's like, no, just tell me. So I took pretty much like 45 minutes to tell her this 3 hour story. But that's my mom. But my friends, I intentionally, even the ones that asked for spoilers, I wouldn't give them to them. But my friend that I went to the film with the second time, he said, you did a really good job of keeping quiet, but I could tell from your body language that something exciting was going to happen.
Sure.
Because you would like tense up a little bit, like you were like paying more attention all of a sudden.
You can't help it.
Right.
Have you seen the film?
I have not,
okay.
But I was actually talking about it yesterday and wanted to. That's when I heard that it was a 3.5 hour movie. And I was like, I don't know if my husband will sit still that long.
You don't have to. You could just take a break, send him out to go and get refreshments,
yeah.
You know, go off, you know, go on reconnaissance and come back.
So I don't think I'm spoiling this for anybody. If you haven't seen the film and you are, again, I think I'm doing you a service by saying this. So kill me if you want later.
Okay. I'm
but
curious what he's going to say.
It is because we're talking about how long the film is.
Yes.
It's 3 hours and 5 minutes.
Oh.
That's that plus the preview commercials that you see beforehand because you want to get there and just watch the whole experience.
Right.
That's another 15 minutes. So it does end up being about 3.5 hours
right.
total.
Even with credits, when you watch the credits?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we like
yep.
to sit and watch all the credits,
right.
too.
So this is my spoiler-free spoiler. You don't have to wait until the very last frame of the credit. There is no Easter egg at the end of it.
Oh. Because that's what we wait for.
So
yeah.
If you want to go to the bathroom, go for it.
Yeah.
But that being said, the credits, I think, sentimentally, we're accustomed to sitting
right.
through the credits. And they did a really good job. Marvel did a really good job in paying homage.
Correct.
Throughout the credits. So it's worth watching the credits. But if you're waiting until the very, 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 very last frame for an Easter egg, there isn't one.
For all of my friends out there, here's what I will tell you as far as the, you know, if you were going to try and sit through the entire 3.5 hours. Here, a lot of us know that that is a worthy goal and not going to happen. The thing that I thought was so different about Avengers Endgame versus Avengers Infinity War is that this has more, it's less of a battle film than Infinity War, so I'll put it that way. So there are some times where you're just like, you know what, I just need to bite the bullet and just go ahead and go and know that you can catch up. I guess there's some things where there's, you know, you don't have to race. It's just, okay, there's going to be, you really need to give yourself time to get to know all of our favorite characters again, and that's what they do at Endgame.
So one of my friends, right before we went in, and I would never download this app because, no.
What?
There's apparently an app called Run P.
Yes.
I've never heard of it until he told me. And it's basically, you start the app, like saying, I'm watching this movie starting now.
Okay.
And you start the film, and it buzzes you, saying, you can leave now and go to the bathroom. Because there's nothing major is going to happen. And while you're in the bathroom, it actually gives you
a countdown.
A countdown and a 2 minute and 2 minute update, a text update of this is what you missed.
Wow.
So when you go back in, you're caught up in a text format to be like, from this
point to this point,
these two characters discuss this.
Right.
And this was the end of it. And then so I'm like, first of all, watch the damn movie.
Right.
Second of all, the whole, like, pulling out your phone, like, we're all these commercials are like, be quiet and put your phone in your pocket and turn it off.
Right.
Like, this is the antithesis of that, mm-hmm. to be like, I'm going to get a buzz. How many times you get a buzz in a, and again, I have, my phone's always on buzz. It's never
correct.
On ringer. So every time I get a buzz, I'm like, oh, I got an email or a text or I'll take a look at it later. Because I'm watching a movie. That's
right.
Something I love to do. Now, with this app, like, if it's going to buzz, I would be like, is it, like, should I look, like, it's just more, it's weird. I would never do it, but I know that
for
some
out
people,
there, some are more tech-related.
It could also
friends,
not
like
100% it. Of the movies out there are 3 hours long. You can wait an hour and a half. You still have to go to the bathroom, prepare yourself. You know what your bladder looks like.
I just know that life is short, and I'm not going to stay uncomfortable over a film. Even if I love the film, I'm just one of those people that I'm like, I'm sorry, I have to go. And so I'm just like, I'm not going to sit there and make myself miserable over a movie.
And we were in a giant theater, and I literally got the seat right in the middle.
So
regardless of which direction I went, I was going to have to bother 15 people.
Yeah. Right? who are going to love that, right?
You're the good person on the plane that once you sit down, you just stay there. And I'm all like, I'll just try and time it. But
I don't think we've ever discussed this. If you got a choice, you get to pick your seat. What are you taking?
Window, on an airplane?
Yeah. Window, middle, or window or aisle.
I'm like, who picks middle on purpose?
So, I don't know.
I do, actually.
You do? You
why
pick
do you
middle?
Like it?
I do.
Why?
Because I've got more room underneath the seat in front of me. Because when you're on the aisle, you've got like a half space.
True.
Okay.
And the window is just like it bugs me having to get up or, you know, to have people move.
So you get best of the both worlds. You get your more the space and there's only one other person.
And nobody ever, nobody will take those seats. So I can always get up as far ahead as I want as if I'll take the middle. So then I'm not way in the back because I wanted an aisle.
Very wise,
Ms. Allison. I prefer aisle.
You prefer aisle. Why?
Even though I don't really go to the bathroom, it's the whole space thing. I'm not tall, you guys, but I like to have my feet in the aisle.
So you're just in the way for the stewardess. And I am a window person.
All three could travel together.
Exactly. And nobody will even have to rock, paper, scissors. It'll be fine because I'm a window person. I usually do not have to get up very often. I do not feel bad if I do. I try to be as respectful about it as I can. But I like to just – I also, similar to Jayden, am not a very tall person. So I like being able to, like, snuggle up against the window and just poke myself in a little corner.
It's a built-in headrest.
Exactly. And just – I like to just snuggle down and burrow in, and I'm usually fine over there in the corner. So good job. So we're like, next time we're traveling,
and I don't mind moving if I'm traveling alone. There's two strangers next to me. I don't mind getting up.
Right.
So that's also the reason I like the aisles. Like, I don't mind it. Of course, because I don't really go to sleep even on longer. It's like, so I'm just always up. So I don't mind if somebody needs to
I
get
do.
Up.
I'm headphones on, head against the
oh,
bulkhead.
Oh, headphones. Yeah.
Headphones
nobody talks
on,
to
head
me.
Against the bulkhead.
Yeah, for sure. Headphones
maybe
the
sleep.
Whole time.
Yeah, well, if you try it, for me anyway, if you try and put your head against the window wall, whatever you call it.
Right.
It's not really bulkhead, but it's you know, it's plastic and it's just not comfortable.
No. Oh.
It's like,
and it's a little colder.
And in the middle,
you need more weave, Stephanie. I got so much. I have a nice pillow that travels with me at all times, thanks to my hairdresser.
Well, they have the, most people, I don't even think they realize this because I never see anybody do it but me and my husband. You can take the headrest if you have them and fold them up by your ears, and then you have this little built-in headrest thing.
Yep.
You don't end up falling into somebody's lap if you fall asleep.
Yeah. I've done that a couple times.
Well, I'm very excited to have you on the show, Stephanie. We're going to talk to you about the book fair that you just came from, talk to you about the projects you have, and then we're going to cover comedy in our favorite comic book movies when we return on Be Our Geek. Welcome back to Be Our Geek, where everyone is a geek about something. I'm Ms. Shannon, that's Jayden Satia, and now we are officially going to talk to this week's guest geek, Stephanie Allensworth. And so, Stephanie, thank you very much again for joining us. And so, Stephanie, you're an author. You have two books currently, right?
Yes.
And so they're children's books, right?
They are. They're picture books.
Yes. And so you have Mr. Hamster's Rescue and A Home for the Finch Family. So what's the age group that you are targeting for those?
3 to 7.
Oh, see? So, Jayden, you're right in that window.
My five-year-old loves to read books, and he's now starting to read as well, specific words. And so, yeah, I live in that. We have... I love the fact that we have so many books in our house right now.
And my son is 11, but he's also on the spectrum. And so we are a little behind on some of that. So we're still in the picture book phase of things that we're doing as well. And so what made you decide that you wanted to write these children's books?
Well, first let me say that as soon as we wrap here, I'm going to go to my car and I'm going to bring some in for you.
Oh, thank you.
As thank you gifts.
Oh, we appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what made me want to do this? It's something that I've wanted to do for years.
Yes.
And because a lot of people think that I just decided one day I was going to be a writer.
Right.
Well, I've had all of these stories written, and I had them all in one big volume for a very long time on an old Presario laptop. That's how far back we're going. Mm-hmm. And one day my hard drive locked up, and it was completely unrecoverable.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so I lost everything.
That must have been heartbreaking.
It was, because I had been talking to publishers already, but I took it a bit as a sign that maybe it wasn't the time for me, and I didn't want to sit down and have to redo it. And I was going to do it all as one book. And all these stories, it would have been each one, you know, is a separate story inside one book.
Now, looking at your website, it looks like these are kind of like true life stories.
They are true life stories. Every one of my books will be true life stories.
Okay.
So Mr. Hamster's Rescue was the first one that I wanted to put out because it's a tribute to my dad.
Oh.
And because we had this pet hamster when we were kids, and who I lovingly call Mr. Hamster, but honestly, I don't even know if he had a name. But he escaped. He was an escape artist. He escaped from his cage one day and disappeared. We had no idea where he was.
Right.
And two nights later, like my brother, because it was my brother's hamster, and my brother Ricky was just beside himself, can't find the hamster. We looked everywhere. And two nights later, our dog, Jason, was barking in the middle of the night.
Yes.
And we went in, and everybody got up, woke the whole household up. And we went and looked, and he's on the second floor in one of the bedrooms barking down a vent. And because we had the old style heaters that were floor vents, and they're the big iron ones. And, you know, they take the vent off, put a flashlight down there, and there's a hamster at the bottom.
Just hanging out.
But he's in the basement, and we're on the second floor.
Huh. So that's quite the little journey.
Yeah.
You know what? And so I'm going to pause you, Stephanie.
Got to MacGyver it, you know?
I'm going to pause you because this is going to sound like a giant left, but how on earth do you end up with a dog named Jason? That is like the least dog-sounding dog name I think I have ever heard.
That's another book.
Right. That's another book, how we named our dog. The dog before that was named Freddie, and it was a female, so who knows? We were kids. We don't know. Yeah. Better left for the imagination, I guess.
Right.
Okay.
But so Jason, you know, discovered the hamster 2 days later, and my dad is like, I got this, right? Right. So he goes, sure. He goes down, downstairs and he comes back up. He's got a milk carton, a pair of scissors, and a big ball of twine.
Yes.
And he cuts out the sides of the milk carton.
Your dad's MacGyver?
My dad became MacGyver that day.
Okay.
Yeah. And, he made an elevator.
How cool is that?
And we put some hamster food in the bottom of it, and the long, long string, you know, was to lower it down
the
shaft.
He made a little carriage.
Yeah.
And he hopped right in because there was food in there.
Nice.
And so Jason was the hero, and my dad was the hero, and, you know, we all lived happily ever after.
Yes. What a great story. And what a great way to... Again, share your story with the world, with the picture book. It was awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I dedicated it to my dad because he was always a very, very creative person. And that was, to me, it was a great fix, and it's a great story. So that was the first one I wanted to share when I got back into wanting to do this.
And so did you self-publish the film?
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how was that process for you? Because we talked recently, one of our other friends that is a musician here in town, he kind of talked about the way that he's decided to distribute his music. And so what's it like from the author's perspective of doing that?
Well, I looked around quite a bit first, mm-hmm. and I ended up with Archway, self-publishing house. It's a leg of Simon & Schuster, and I specifically went to that self-publishing leg because I already had connections, excuse me, with Simon & Schuster. So my goal was, if they like it enough, maybe Simon & Schuster will pick it up and represent me. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a bit naive of me because, you know, in this day and age, it's all about your social media.
Right.
So if you don't have a huge social media following, they don't even look twice at you,
okay.
No matter who you are. So I had to start my social media campaign and try to get hits and, you know, Instagram and,
right.
and you know, do everything. Not just to sell books, but to get the attention of the agents.
Right.
And I'm still not there. Okay. I said, well, you know, I've got a couple thousand followers, and they're like, try 25,000. You're killing my groove, man.
This is now a recurring theme because we had a similar conversation with Judd Haley, a good singer-songwriter friend of ours, as well in our previous episode. And he was talking about that as well, is that you, as an artist, are working on whatever your craft is, but then you also have to go, well, am I posting enough? Am I building this presence enough? How am I actually going to
get
that?
And he had a PR team that came in with him, too, and, you know, he's... again, for him, he just wants to make good music.
Right.
And that's why he's got supporters, professionals that are helping him meet those other goals that will get his music out there a little bit more. And so I have a question for you, because you can self-publish on Amazon too, right?
Yes.
So have you taken that route, and has that been successful? I have no idea, because I think Judd talked about the micro cents to the dollar that you end up getting on Spotify. I'm not sure how
versus
that works.
Amazon
yeah,
music.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works
for
publishing from an author's perspective.
Well, I didn't publish on Amazon for my second book either.
Okay.
Right now, I'm with Ingram Spark, which is another self-publishing house, but it's the leg of Ingram, who is the biggest distributor of books.
Okay.
So again, my thought process is, if I can get in to the people that actually distribute the books, you know.
Right.
But again, this whole thing that happened is a switch in how not only the television studios, but how music is being produced as well. There's no more. Scouts, they go out and scout you.
Right.
And when they're scouting you, they're scouting you on social media.
Right.
They're not coming to see your gig.
Because they want to know that you already have a following. And
right.
how they're going to be able to spin that into sales.
Instead of building you and giving you a package, you know, at the beginning, now you have to do all that yourself. And then they might come in and pick you up. But even with marketing for my books, even though I paid for... the publishing to be done. In the first book, I paid to have my illustrations done for me. And they won't market for you. You have to do it all on your own. So you have to get out there. You have to do the social media. You have to, you know, hit the streets, go to the book fairs, go talk the talk, and talk to the public.
So this is, again, me coming in from a business perspective, right? So let's just say you're the artist and you've created something that's worthy enough to be distributed through a distributor. Back in the day, they used to do all the work. They used to put the marketing dollars in you to get your content out there, and they would make money off of you, and you would get, I don't know, 20-30% or 40%, but you didn't do the work. Hopefully the business side also supports the artist. Now, if you're doing all the work, hopefully they're still not taking 70%.
Good question.
Yeah, like how does that, is that flip now? Because you're doing all the work, you're also taking a majority of those sales?
Well, what would happen is if they decide to come in and represent you and they're going to start marketing your book and representing you, then you basically have to sell your rights to them.
Okay.
Okay, so now then they buy you out. They give you a certain amount of money, and you don't get any residuals until all of those books have sold.
Okay.
And so as soon as all of those books have sold and they start buying more books, then you start getting residuals again.
So but, it goes back to why you would probably continue to market yourself, because you want to get past that threshold.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you still want to write a book, Jay?
Yeah, but nobody's going to read it.
Well,
me and my 500 followers, maybe they'll all read it and give me a dollar.
Well, Stephanie, your second book was A Home for the Finch Family, which sounds adorable as well. And you said you're working on a third one, or you're done with the third one?
Well, I've written it already. I just haven't published it yet.
Okay.
The third one is The Adventures of Sammy the Squirrel.
Nice.
And it's a baby squirrel that my sister and brother and I found when we were just little ones. And we brought it home and snuck it into the house and nursed it to health. And it's pretty funny when my mom finally realizes there's a full-grown squirrel running around our house. Then I'm no spoilers here. I'm not. You have to wait for it to come out.
Right.
But it's going to make for a good story as well, and it'll be a series because
okay.
I'll have the beginning of, you know, when Sammy's first found, and you know how he becomes a pet in our household.
Right.
And then a story about Sammy versus the hawk. Which is...
I'll have to read that one first, because I really do not want my son thinking that we should have a pet squirrel. I'm like,
exactly.
We have enough like pets already. Yeah. I don't need any additional ad hoc pets.
Yeah. and then eventually Sammy goes off and starts his own family. So it should be a three-book series.
I would okay. Believe.
That's great. And the fact that you're able to... Again, these are your stories.
They're real.
And I think this is where your competitive edge, I think, over some of the other... like authors, children's authors, and again, I have no idea if all those are true stories or not, but I think that's what you use, I would hope, to get the word out about, like, these stories are happening all over the place with you as well. Look at my story, and hopefully this helps create that artist, the future artist, to be like, oh my God, I love when I read Stephanie's book, and I had this thing happen to me, and now I'm going to write something too. As a kid. So I think that's your competitive edge. I mean, for me to know a little bit more, again, we always go towards the true stories or based on true stories.
Right.
And I watch movies. Again, you used to be in the industry as well. When we watch something that is based on a true story or is based on true events or taken from something, you have a little bit more stake in that story before you even go into it. And you're able to look past judgment. Because this actually happened.
Right.
So somebody didn't just make it up, right? Again, depending on how much of it is false or not. So I think that actually gives you a stake in the story as well. There's less judgment why did you make that up? Well, that didn't. That's what happened.
Definitely, you really do like exposing those real stories, because that's your TV series as well, is Real People. And so let's just tell everybody a little bit about your TV series.
Well, that's funny, because I never really like put those two things together.
Okay.
But thank you for that.
Now, on the back.
I'm gonna start using that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We do a service here on BRK.
Yeah. Real People came out of me trying to do a show for somebody else.
Right.
I wanted to produce this show and have somebody else be the host. I didn't want to be the host of it. And I got a little bit tired of the diva personalities.
Yes.
And you just seem to argue too much with people about things. That's like, this is my show, my creation. I want to do it my way. So,
so
I teamed up with another producer, and I said, you know what? I'm going to be the host.
Okay.
I was pretty rough when I first started. I was pretty rough. I look at the first one and I think, oh boy.
You had to shake out some cobwebs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that must have been an interesting transition for you, because Jake and I both know you from when you were still basically a talent management mm-hmm. company. And so you would have, as you said, I'm not sure all of your talent were divas, but you sure obviously were dealing with people that were that. So how mm-hmm. was the transition for you to go from I'm the behind-the-scenes person to I'm the face of all of my own products?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. I like it because it's me.
Yes.
It's me doing this for me this time instead of trying to do something for somebody else. And I think it took a universal slap in the face to finally realize that this was what I was supposed to be doing all along. Writing the books as well.
Right.
So it all came very organically out of the transition, because when I transitioned out of the talent agency business, I have to say it was liberating.
Okay.
Like, people think, oh, she failed, you know, and I've had people say, you know, snarky things on Facebook about it. But it's like, no, I didn't fail. I learned.
Right.
I learned a lot. And I chose to close it.
Right.
Nobody closed me down. I chose to step away from it.
Right.
So that, I think that's very important for anybody that knows me to understand.
Are you more of an entrepreneur than getting, you have books and you used to be in the film and television industry, and now you have your own show and you're looking at, again, as you're talking about, more of the social media, and you're trying to get your face out there. How are you now taking in who you are as a professional versus in the past? Obviously, you have so many things happening. Cause I think, didn't you also do a podcast or something? You've been on a couple regular hosts or something. I've heard you a couple times because I've known you for a while. I hear you a lot.
He's following you around, Stephanie. That's what he's saying.
That being said, how are you able to take the newfound entrepreneurship or the refound love to get your name out there? It's me this time. How's that journey been for you to come out on the other side? And I'm assuming you're stronger for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it doesn't kill you, right, it makes you stronger.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm embracing it. I have to say, if I may, I just won 3 awards for my show.
Should have led off with that.
Yeah.
Award-winning Stephanie Allensworth here, you guys. Tell us about those.
I submitted 3 of my episodes to the Best of the Midwest Media Fest out of Wisconsin, but it's all of Chicago and all the way over to the Dakotas.
Right.
So it's a big fest. And I submitted these as an amateur, and they called up and said, nope, we're going to move you to the professional category. And then I thought, oh, no. You know, I thought, now I'm going to be, like, competing with Chicago.
Right.
And, you know, nobody else really scared me that much. Just Chicago.
You're like, I got the notice.
And all 3 of my episodes won the top award.
Congratulations.
And I'm going next month to the ceremony. And
oh, wonderful.
So tell us a little bit about the show. What if somebody watches the show, what do they expect?
It's a talk show, basically. And I choose the people because I find something very interesting about them. They have to have something to share.
Right.
They need to be doing things, you know, for the right reason. The people that are giving back instead
yes.
of just taking. I don't want anybody on my show that is going to be, you know, so self-absorbed that they forget what they're doing. And I would never invite them on in the first place if
right.
that was the case. So people that are working with charities, people that are doing research into, like, clean water. I've covered the opioid addiction.
Yes.
I've covered the sex trafficking. And even people like my friend Barry Zavan. Loved having him on.
Yes.
He's so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had singers like Patti Peterson on
right.
board, and her show won one of the awards.
Oh,
I did it
wonderful.
Out of her home.
Oh, okay.
We went on site and mm-hmm. taped that one. And the one that I get a lot of negative feedback on, but I guess they say my episode with Hannah Kritzik.
Yes, who we know Hannah. We've
you
spoken
know
to
Hannah.
Her as well. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, I used to represent her at one time.
Right.
And I've gotten over 4,000 hits on that episode.
Yes.
And nothing but nasty comments. Actually, mostly nothing, but mostly nasty. Every now and again, somebody will give me, she did a really good job because, you know, whatever reason.
I love Hannah.
And all these other haters are like,
I love Hannah.
You
Hannah,
suck. I want to kill you.
Hannah
I've had
was
people
difficult.
Say.
Hannah wasn't a diva, but Hannah was difficult because Hannah doesn't talk a lot when she's right. on air. She right. talks a lot off air. She's a fantastic young woman. Fantastic young woman.
The minute the cameras were off, she jumped out of her chair and started blasting. And we're like, quick, turn it back on.
That happened to us as well, is that we accidentally ended up having to pivot and talk about something else because once we started interviewing her, she kind of clammed up on us. And we were like very surprised that was the case. And Jayden and I can talk to ourselves for hours, so we were fine. Yep. But same thing is love Hannah. But Hannah does not talk once the mic is on. I think there's just something about her.
Well, she has to warm up.
Yes.
And you have to warm her up a little bit before the cameras
come. But we can't all have an episode. We can't all record for 3 hours so that we can get 20 minutes of hours. Yeah. 20 minutes of content from a guest.
So how are you able to take the negative comments or any kind of comments? Again, if you're putting yourself out there, right? You if you're putting your face out there, it's my time, my show. You're going to get those, right? So how are you able to take that? The feedback, I'm just going to leave it at feedback, whether it's positive or negative, because you're getting a lot of it now because you are the one. There's no filter. You're not behind a company. You're not behind a board of directors. Like, it's you. Talk about how have you taken that so far. And
well, the very first one was horrible. I was like, it hurt right down to my soul. Like, maybe they don't understand how well I know her and that, you know, I tried to keep things rolling because I had to fill in the quiet spots.
Right.
And, you know, I've had people say something as stupid as, well, why was she in at a big chair? You should have put her in a small chair and all this other stuff.
Right.
And I just thought, okay, I go look at their pages and think,
okay.
Basement dweller.
Right. Mm-hmm. Trolls are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I'm happy every now and when I see a positive one. And my producer just says, hey, it doesn't matter good or bad. People are watching.
They're paying attention.
And that's what's important. Mm-hmm. So imagine all the ones watching that aren't saying anything.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I equate that to when a truck is driving down the freeway and it says, how am I driving?
Right.
And there's a phone number. 99.9% of any calls that go in are negative. Mm. Like, if it sounds like you're driving awesome, like, the likelihood of me calling that number to be like, this driver was amazing.
Yeah, you'd have to be following him for a while.
Right, to go, this counts as amazing. So, that zipper merge
so
was
to
the
know
best.
That there are probably tons of people out there that just liked watching the show. That particular episode or just you, they're just not commenting. Because I know that I comment on things that are more personal than anything else. Like, otherwise, you're making content, you're reading something. It's my choice to stop watching it whenever I want, right? I have that ability. Nobody's forcing me to watch this. And you're not asking for feedback.
Yeah. Well, just to note, I submitted Hannah's episode as well and won on that as well.
Right.
So that was all the feedback I needed.
You got to be doing something right. You know, before you were coming on the show, Stephanie, we were talking about some things that you would like to talk about on Be Your Geek that maybe might be outside of your projects. And we were talking about comedies, and we ended up talking about film comedies. And two of the ones that you sent me when I asked you to do a list of some of the newer films that you thought were your favorite comedies right now, you picked both Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And so are you a big geek fan in general, or did you just really resonate with the Guardians films?
Well, I'm not geeking out on the Avengers like you guys are.
Right.
So I've seen them all.
Yes.
And I agree that they, a lot of times they were very serious. Like, they weren't injecting any comedy anywhere.
Right.
And then it's like it slowly crept in. It started, they started to actually write for it and add the comedy. Now, I would much rather laugh than cry. So, so when I started seeing the Guardians of the Galaxy and, oh my gosh, the characters, the actors, I mean, everything you were talking about earlier, everything just melded perfectly. And, I can't even tell you. I even named, I grew an avocado tree and named it Groot.
Well done.
He looked like root too when it actually sprouted. It was hilarious.
It's going to be your next book.
Yes. My Little Groot. My Little Groot. Yeah.
Well, I would actually go in the same realm. When they started injecting comedy into this, again, we're talking about the Marvel Universe. There's obviously more comedies out there than that.
Right.
I'd gravitate towards Thor Ragnarok. You know?
By the time we got to Thor, and I'll even go a little bit earlier when we had the first Ant-Man movie come out.
Sure, yeah.
And I do think that we did notice a big difference, and the way that they started collecting the directors did the films were people who could go through that gambit of emotions. So not only could we have humor that was in it, but they could do the opposite and get you to the point where you did want to cry or you felt right. some sort of emotional tie. And so that was when I was very proud to talk to my non quote unquote geek friends and go, no, it's just a good movie. Especially and Jaden's heard me say this before, Stephanie, by the time we got to Black Panther, I'm like, this movie is just solid. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, there's a lot of the things that you normally want to do with a movie and put a label on it and go, it's a great black film. It's a great superhero film. Like, this is just a great movie. I'm like, it's a great movie, and you can, whether you get the character or not, you'll still enjoy the movie. But I think that when we started looking at the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the other thing that I thought was interesting is the way that initially DC tried to counter-program mm-hmm. to the way that Marvel was, as they put it, too funny and too corny and too this. So they were going, no, we're going to take this very seriously and we're going to create this dark world. And they did try to come up with a different methodology, which, I mean, I don't think I'm the only person that says I don't think that it worked. Not the way.
No, and they're realizing that, right? Yes. I mean, that's why Wonder Woman was what it was.
And Aquaman.
Reason. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even Justice League. Like, and I feel like they noticed that maybe with these kind of films, or maybe it's a combination of what we have going on in the world, if you want something that has wide appeal, it does seem to me that right now, wide appeal movies have some sort of humor injected into them right now. Mm-hmm. So do you go, you know, as you said, Stephanie, you rather go laugh versus crying. So when you're looking at, you know, you go, I have a TV show that I have to produce. I have books to write. I have a very limited time that I can be
limited
entertained.
Limited time? What?
Right.
Who in this world has limited time?
So when you see a trailer for a film, do you go, this looks like I'll come out of it smiling, or, you know, how do you, you know, what actually draws you in?
Well, that's a really good question, because okay. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the magic is for me. Like, I'm a total geek when it comes to Spaceballs.
Okay. All right. All right.
Absolutely. Yes. Anytime that comes on, I'm watching it.
You're stopping what you're doing.
I'm
okay.
stopping what I'm doing, and I'm watching it. And I laugh at every single one of the
every joke.
Every, yep.
You're
yep.
still looking at Barf going, Barf is the best.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Not here, mister. This is a Mercedes. I repeat these lines over and over and over again, much like people did with Airplane. Remember when Airplane came out?
Or, you know, Naked Gun or
yeah,
anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're repeatable lines, and yeah, sure, I'm stealing them, but
right.
people
but
always
people
laugh.
People know it, yeah, and they know it, you know, and it's something that's memorable for a reason. And I do think that, you know, that's a very good point that you bring up. Most of the lines that I think are quotable lines that we say all the time are comedies. Like, do we know anybody, can you think of anybody right now in our little friend group that goes around quoting dramas? Like, I don't know, like who's sitting around with
first
you know,
rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club.
Right, that's probably yeah. the only one. What else do we, can we think of anything else?
But comedy, again, just to kind of hit it again, comedy's harder coming in from an actor perspective. A comedic actor is a comedic actor. You
right.
can't. Drama, I think, is a little easier. And again, every art and every genre is hard. But my personal opinion is it's harder to make a really good comedy
right.
than it is to make a really good drama.
Well, and I can add on to that as to what makes a comedy work and what it doesn't on a global perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because comedy doesn't always sell in the same, you know, you can't be funny about the same things. The jokes don't always work in different areas,
right.
even in the United States. The East versus the West, the North versus the South. But then you go overseas, go international with it, well, they don't get it at all.
Right.
You know, you might be saying something that's very insulting to their people or their culture.
Mm-hmm.
So the key is physical comedy.
Right.
You have to be physical. If you want something to sell overseas, you have to do more physical comedy than jokes.
It's more slapstick than anything else. I mean, I see that with any of the... I grew up in India, right? So my parents have these Indian channels, and majority of the stuff that they watch, even from the soap opera's perspective, right? Even from the drama's perspective, is those... Like, I look at that stuff, I'm like, and I laugh, and they're like intense moments. And I'm like, what is this? Because I don't get it, right? It doesn't translate to me. But a comedy translates to me because it is more comedic. It is more slapsticky. It is more, it's more physical. You're absolutely right. Dramas just don't translate for me. I'm like, that's a horrible camera angle. It's just those.
You're picking it apart.
It's a telenovela, right? Da-da-da-da-da. And it's like one shot. It's like, takes 30 seconds for this one action. I'm like, what is happening? Right now,
so you're more likely to get taken out of the film when it's a comedy. You're like, okay, well, I get it. Or it made me laugh or it didn't.
No, but I agree with you. I think comedy is harder, but again, it is universal. Just like music is universal. I was going to ask you, for your books, are you looking to go international with them? Are there going to be other forms, like an audio book or other things that could maybe have a wider appeal to international audiences?
Well, they're available worldwide right now.
Okay.
So because they're on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all of these other ancillary sites. Everybody's got the ability to order the books and sell them through their sites. As far as changing the language, I don't know. I do know that over in China and Japan, hamsters, because of their small size pets, you know, their pocket pets kind of a thing. They're very, if you go on Instagram and look up, you know, people's hamsters videos, you would just die laughing because there's so many people overseas with hamsters as pets.
Right.
Like it probably outnumbers American hamster lovers like about a million to
one. Why don't you just release your book in like China and just have it be a global sensation?
Well, I just started looking at Amazon Prime Video.
Yes.
And I actually put up my first couple videos just in the UK.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
Well, you can include this new web series and then we can push them over there and do a little test market.
Yes.
So tell everybody your website, Stephanie. Where's the easiest way to find all things that have to do with Stephanie Allensworth?
StephanieLeeAllensworth.com.
And you said you need more Instagram followers. Can we find you on Instagram and,
you can.
And Facebook? Okay.
Mm-hmm. So there's two Instagram pages. So there's Books by Allensworth.
Okay.
And that's just my books. And Stephanie Allensworth, which is my personal page. But sometimes they get commingled.
Okay.
Because I don't remember which one I'm logged into when I post.
Fair enough.
Welcome to our world.
We can push
that as well.
One audience to the other.
Yeah, and I have three Facebook pages.
Okay.
So my personal one for the show and one for the book. So.
Well, we will make sure that we put all of those links on BR Geek, and we'll put all of those on there. We also want to remind people that we have some great things that are coming up with the Twin Cities Film Fest.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do, including...
It's almost sold out. That show is almost sold out.
Is it? Okay.
Blackmore, yeah.
The show that he's talking about is The Secrets of Blackmore. We have a screening that is coming up on Wednesday, May 8th here in the Twin Cities at the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights. To remind everybody what The Secrets of Blackmore is it's a two-hour documentary that explores the real story behind the evolution of the game Dungeons & Dragons. So it starts with these fellas that were playing this game here in the Twin Cities that 10 years later ended up being Dungeons & Dragons.
Yep.
So we're going to do a question and answer with the folks from the film.
Cast and crew is going to be there. It's going to be amazing. At the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights.
And you can get those tickets if you go to TwinCitiesFilmFest.org and you can get information about what we have going on. We're coming up on our giant celebration in October.
In October, and actually I want to throw out another quick event too. The film festival is also, again, we're very conscious of our community and social justice causes as you've been to the festival, we focus on a specific social justice cause. So as you were talking about sex trafficking and addiction, those have been our causes in the past year. This year happens to be environmental responsibility, but we had an opportunity to partner on an event that is not necessarily a festival event, but we're just helping spread the word. It's for United Nations Minneapolis.
Okay.
The event is around the global campaign of He for She, gender equality movement that United Nations Global has launched an online campaign. They have chosen the United States chapter, quote unquote, have chosen the Minneapolis location to launch the physical event in support of the global campaign.
Okay.
So we're going to be partnering with United Nations Minneapolis to partner on a he for she panel discussion where we're going to have three male panelists. We're going to have a keynote speaker. She's an author and an award-winning TED Talk speaker as well. We're going to, the United Nations Minneapolis is actually going to give away Gender Ally Awards at this event. It's on May 8th.
Okay.
It's at Parallel Cafe.
Okay.
I think it's the same night as Blackmore.
As Sacres of Blackmore.
But I definitely wanted to kind of put it out there. If you, for some, again, Blackmore's almost sold out, but let's sell that thing out. But then if you are interested in kind of this social justice topic, it's going to be a Parallel Cafe. It's right next to the Twin Stadium. And it's, if you just want to reach out to me, Jaden Satia 79 on Instagram, I'll get you guys free tickets and everything for that particular.
Perfect.
We just want to have a good crowd there.
Is that up on your website as well?
We're going to push it out to all of our database coming up next week. So if you go to TwinCitiesFilmFest.org, just sign up for our e-newsletters and you'll get something in the email.
And again, we mentioned that you can find Stephanie at StephanieLeeAllensworth.com. You can always find our show if you go to Be Our Geek Show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at BeOurGeekShow@gmail.com. So thank you very much for joining us, Stephanie. Jaden, of course, I will see you in a couple of weeks. And to everybody else out there, we appreciate you being part of Be Our Geek Show. And we'll see you next time because everyone's a geek about something.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that.